We're talking today with 3rd District Congressman Frank Lucas. Congressman, let's talk about some of the things going on right now within the agricultural world, or impacting agriculture most certainly. And it seems like suddenly somebody lit the fuse, and we've got a lot of interest in moving forward with the Trade Promotion Authority, House and Senate both.
Absolutely, Ron. This is one of those things that's been sitting on the burner for a long time. Virtually every president from Jerry Ford on down has had the ability to do Trade Promotion Authority, to negotiate trade deals, to open up markets, to lower barriers, to give us access to the world, and then bring the result back to Congress for an up or down vote, no amendments, either up or down. The problem for some time has been it expired, and the Democrat members of the United States House simply did not want to give that authority to their own Democratic president, Barack Obama. But now I think the momentum's here. Most of us on my side of the aisle accept that it's important that the next president have that authority. And if it will help finish the Trans-Pacific Partnership and maybe help push the process along in Europe, then all the better. Mm-hmm. But the majority of this authority will help the next president. This guy just needs to finish up stuff. He's delayed.
There's some folks in the Republican ranks that have questioned, should we give this to Mr. Obama?
By the time you give the authority, by the time the process is put to use, by the time that new agreements are reached, 21 months will have passed. We will have a new president in 21 months. So my perspective is we have to open up our access to markets around the world. That's what agriculture survived on since colonial times. And at the same time, acknowledge Barack Obama will not always be president. 21 months from now, we'll have a new one. I'm not sure who that's going to be, Ron, but we'll have a new one. And this authority needs to be available to that next president.
Now, you mentioned TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, pretty important for your district.
Oh, absolutely. Whether you consider the pork products we sell into Japan, you consider the rice that's raised in our region, maybe not the 3rd District of Oklahoma, but in our region, there are a number of agricultural products that will sell in Japan if we're just allowed to get in there in a fair fashion. I've spent time when I was chairman of the Ag Committee trying to persuade our neighbors in the region, Australia and New Zealand, that they needed to work with us to encourage more open markets in Japan, that would help all of agriculture around the world. I think we have a potential now to bring this to a focus, but we've got to have TPA to get TPP done.
Let's talk about some of the things that your successor, Mr. Conaway, has been ramriding right now. He's had two or three things on his punch list, including a reauthorization of a couple of things that are fairly important, the grain inspection system, as well as the mandatory price reporting for the livestock side of the ledger.
Absolutely, Ron. In both areas, the committee under Chairman Conaway's leadership has conducted the hearings, have put bills together. A matter of fact, I expect we'll have markups on both this week, potentially in the same day. This will be the shakedown cruise for Chairman Conaway, so to speak, from a legislative perspective. But they're both things that need to be done. Yeah, there'll be some tweaks, but it's basically policy that needs to be in place. Now, when you step past the current policy that's on the agenda, there are a couple of other areas where Chairman Conaway and the committee have been preparing the groundwork. One, perhaps not so much in the public's eye, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission needs to be reauthorized. They're the folks with jurisdiction over the derivatives and all of the commodity contracts that matter so much to those of us in rural America. We started this process in the previous Congress. I was able to put together a bipartisan bill, passed the House of Representatives even, but the Senate would never take it up. So Mike has to start over. He's laid the groundwork for that. I don't know at what point the markup will come, but it will come. The other thing, which has received lots of attention back here on the East Coast, the chairman's been very focused on the SNAP program, the food stamp program, the nutrition programs. Are they being effectively utilized? Are they cost efficient? Are they helping people step away from the challenges of their life? I don't know where that leads us, but clearly Chairman Conaway's been very focused on that and at subcommittee as well as full committee.
Now, you know, you mentioned nutrition. That was, of course, one of the battles you had in the 14 farm law. Are we going to see that reopened ultimately, you think?
I don't think so, Ron. What I suspect is that the information that will be gleaned will, one, help as the 10-state pilot project comes to fruition. How do you give states the opportunity, or when we give states the opportunity, how do they do it more efficiently? It'll tee off of that, I think. It'll also be an important issue in the annual appropriations process. Are those nutrition dollars being wisely spent? Are we helping people? Are we hindering people? That sort of stuff. And, yes, when we get around to the 2018 Farm Bill. I shudder when I say it, Ron, the 2018 Farm Bill, with you know, 75%, 80% of all Farm Bill spending being food stamps, it factors into that. So I give Chairman Conaway credit for taking on the big challenge. My problem was in the previous session of Congress, I had a Democrat president, I had a Democrat United States Senate, and I was trying to make sure that the safety net for production agriculture was there. We put that together. Mike's in a slightly different set of circumstances with a Republican Senate and a Republican House. But for 21 more months, that's how much longer President Obama has in office, for 21 more months, I think the White House will be opposed to any substantive reforms that the committee would offer up. But you got to lay the groundwork, and Conaway's working on that right now.
Now, one thing that there's a little bit of worry out in farm country, I guess, is maybe just worry warts, but always the concern about somebody trying to come in and mess with crop insurance funding. We are obviously seeing at least some stuff in the media, in the newspapers on the East Coast, talk about that.
Ron, when you step away from the nutrition programs, the last big pot of money left really in the Farm Bill is crop insurance. The naysayers and the attackers who for decades went after us over the direct payments, that's not there anymore. They're gone. So the pool left is crop insurance. Anybody who's lived in the southwestern United States, in Oklahoma in particular, in the last 5 years knows crop insurance is a matter of survival. We'll fight these fights on the floor of the United States House in the appropriations process. I believe we'll win, but it'll be a hard-fought battle. Mm-hmm. I tell my colleagues up here that I serve with that crop insurance only matters to your landlord, your banker, your spouse, and your father-in-law. Other than that, crop insurance doesn't matter. But last track I had, those are the four most important people in a farmer's world.
We have heard a great deal about some of the things that could happen within crop insurance, and including trying to scale back the subsidy or try to put some sort of a cap on subsidy. A lot of those kind of deals are still floating around.
Oh, absolutely. We'll be attacked over the amount of subsidy, the incentives to help make the crop insurance program work. We'll be attacked over what kind of income limits. Should someone be ineligible if they have a farming operation over a certain size or if they have outside income? We'll be attacked over that. We'll be attacked over, looking at the Southwest in particular, the amount of money paid out because of the super drought we've been through. How could it cost that much? We'll be attacked over that. They'll come from every possible angle. But we'll fight. And on the floor of the United States House, as we have every appropriations process since I've been here, in the agricultural appropriations bill, we'll fight, and we better win because it matters back home. And for our neighbor's benefit, Ron, you pass a farm bill every 5 years. That's been the custom in my time. And you tie down what they call mandatory money for the five-year period. But every year we pass an agricultural appropriations bill that funds the salary at USDA. It funds the day-to-day operations. It's that funding bill for USDA that creates a window of opportunity for people to attack the five-year farm bill. So, yes, we've got a farm bill in place for five, but every year for the full five, we have to defend the provisions in that process.
Let's shift gears away from ag direct, but something you've been working on. You had a measure earlier this year with your former ranking member, Mr. Peterson, kind of going after some of the things going on with EPA these days. EPA is a real sore subject among a lot of farmers because of Waters of the U.S.
Oh, absolutely, Ron. What I'm attempting to do with my bill, and this falls under my jurisdiction being a member of the Science Committee in addition to the Ag Committee, is to reform something called the Science Advisory Board. In 1978, Congress created a group to look over the shoulder of the EPA when they do their scientific research that allegedly their rules are based on to try and make sure that it's real science, it's sound science. What I've discovered in my research and my time on the Science Committee is that it's a very close-knit little group of people who do these projects. We're talking $140 million in recent years worth of research, and that the group that does the science work tends to be the group that will do the peer review the next time. So I want to, taking care of, ironically, a circular motion, I want to make sure that the public can have input. I want to make sure that the participants in these reviews are open to anyone who has qualified. Now, I do ask in the bill explicitly for full disclosure. If you have an economic interest in the process, you have to tell us. But by the same token, if you have benefited from some previous study, you need to tell us that too. Everyone needs to know what the logic is, what the review process is in the science that goes into these products. What's the old line in the coffee shop? Garbage in, garbage out. Well, if we're using garbage science to do the rules, then of course we're going to get garbage rules as a result. If I can't write the entire Endangered Species Act, if I can't rewrite the EPA, then I want to go after the science, whether it's EPA or Fish and Wildlife, that the rules are based on. Make sure it's real.
On LOTUS, I know that the Clean Water Revisions, or whatever you want to call them, Ms. McCartney's trying to change the name on us, but are we going to see the full House go ahead and vote to in this new budget resolution, probably prohibition of implementing that?
That's what I've been advocating to my colleagues. Use the appropriations process to cut off the money. And there again, folks need to remember that one of the ways that you affect policy is you pass laws to say that the federal government shall do something, or you pass a law to say that the federal government shall not do something. But in a situation like this, where the president would veto any bill that would change current law dealing with the EPA, you use the appropriations process to cut off the money. If they can't buy paper, if they can't hire people, if they can't have telephones, can't buy computers, you shut them off. That's the avenue of attack I think we take this time.